couple of updates, and then whatever's on your mind. A few calendar items. I'll be traveling to Washington, D.C. Later this week to attend the National Governors Association. And also, that'll involve meetings at the White House. I think the governors are meeting with the president on Monday. We'll also be attending the Republican Governors Association events. It'll be happening around the same time when we're there. So, secondly, just a quick weather update. A lot of you have been following this, television stations doing a good job keeping Hoosiers informed. Right now, we still have about 256 trucks deployed. Our peak in the south was midday Monday. We had 440 trucks deployed. Right now, we still have 48 counties under active travel status alerts. Clark County continues to be under a red travel warning. The word now is we're continuing to focus on clearing the roads, but we have some severe cold coming in all across the state. There's some projections of, in some cases, 30 below zero wind chills starting tonight through Thursday. So we're just encouraging Hoosiers to remain vigilant, particularly sensitive to their neighbors' circumstances, stranded motorists, it's going to be a time of some weather challenges for many people across the state. A couple of things to comment on in terms of real time. House Bill 1001, which is the House budget, was published yesterday. I want to express my appreciation for the House's commitment to making education the top priority in this budget and in this session. I said early on that I wanted this to be an education session of the Indiana General Assembly, and I believe the budget the House has produced keeps faith with that. I'm very pleased that the House budget includes all of the key elements of our education agenda. Significant increase in tuition support, increase in funding for charter schools through their charter capital grant, removal of the dollar cap on vouchers, and increasing the scholarship tax credit. Each of those items were at the very center of the agenda that we outlined starting back in December, and they are included in the House budget. Pleased about that. Also grateful to see the Regional Cities Initiative, the Bicentennial Capital Projects there. I would say we're in the ballpark between the budget that we submitted and the budget the House submitted, and we're going to work very diligently with, frankly, an eye toward urging caution. I think it's important that we urge caution on overall spending. The guardrails that I established early on were I don't want to see our state government grow any faster than the family budgets. The people of Indiana are holding the line to the level of the average rate of inflation is important. Maintaining adequate reserves is important. We still have a ways to go on some of those issues. But overall, I'm very encouraged by the House budget, and grateful for Chairman Brown's work on that. Also grateful to see progress. The balanced budget amendment passed out of the Senate committee 9-1. I think it's a good first step and a good start in enshrining the requirement that we live within our means into the Constitution of the state of Indiana. We do support the concept of including flexibility. I think the two-thirds vote number is an important measure, will give future legislatures the flexibility to be able to deal with unpredictable economic downturns and emergencies, while making sure that we lay out the guardrails of the principle that the state government should not plan to spend more than it expects to take in. I was particularly pleased with provisions that protect pension funds and also require that all expected revenues be included in the budget. Third item, ISTEP. The efforts that we've been making to shorten the test over the last week I am pleased with the progress. This morning we had a strong bipartisan 12-0 vote to move a legislative vehicle that's going to move through the process that will significantly reduce, give the Department of Education the ability to significantly reduce the time to administer this test. I talked again to the superintendent yesterday about the legislative effort, as well as we brought our consultants back into town yesterday. They met with the Department of Education over the last 24 hours, and Hoosier families deserve to know we're all working together to shorten this test, and we're going to get it done, just like we said. And I'm grateful for the efforts of all concerned. It's likely going to be a two-piece process, and I don't know exactly where this stands right now. We're moving the legislative product, but as a function of the rules of the House and the Constitution, probably the Senate, the House is moving that right now. The Senate probably can't finish that work until the first of next week. And so we are also urging the adoption of a concurrent resolution, which would give certainty to the position that the General Assembly is going to take. And so when I talked to the superintendent yesterday, she said it would be helpful to have certainty about the legislative changes that concurrent resolution would give, essentially send a very, very clear message to our schools and to our families about the changes that are going to be made. And so that would give the Department of Education the ability to give those instructions by the end of the week. So we're all working together, we're working in concert, and I think Hoosiers, particularly families that were going to be affected by an ISTEP test that more than doubled, are very grateful for the collaboration of all concerned. Tax simplification, I think we're making great progress. The legislation that is moving through the process in the House and the Senate would close loopholes, eliminate more than a dozen tax breaks, and it's an effort to simplify the code. That's a work in progress, but I'm very encouraged about the progress that we are making. One area of the budget, I can elaborate further about where there may be differences of opinion on the budget, but I sounded a cautionary note a minute ago about overall spending levels. There's one area that I think we should be spending more than what the House proposed budget suggests, and that's in career and technical education. Our proposal was for $24 million a year each of the 2 years of the biennium. That was reduced. Also, there was an elimination of performance funding for career and technical education. We're working with House leaders right now. I don't know if that'll be amended into the budget before it proceeds out of the House, but we're all working in good faith. Indiana is on the cusp of becoming the first state in the nation to make career and technical and vocational education a priority in every high school again. We want to make sure that we're putting the resources behind that and that we're providing funding in a way that will support that, and so we'll push on that. One or two quick updates, and then I'm on your time. A HIP 2.0 update. As of the end of last week, 55,000 applications have been received and processed since January 27th. We've received a little bit over 20,000 calls to 877-GET-HIP-9. I met again today with Democrat leadership in the Senate, and we've been reaching out to leaders in both political parties, and met with a broad coalition of organizations last week that work with various communities around the state of Indiana to spread the word. But we're very encouraged by the start. We're continuing to monitor operations very closely, daily calls, meetings with vendors. State teams continue, but I'm very pleased with the start toward enrollment. And this was in my judgment, a bipartisan accomplishment by the state of Indiana. It's being talked about not only around the state, but a bit around the country. And we're going to make sure that it works here in the state, that it works. With that, I am open to questions, comments, things that may be on your mind, and the floor is open.
Governor, yesterday's teachers rally down the hall. Superintendent of Public Instruction went out, got met with the crowd. One of the things she said is that she knows what students need, she knows what schools need. How did you take that comment? Did you take it as sort of an affront or just playing to the crowd? Or you said you folks have been working together quite well, but it seems that you maybe work well behind the scenes, but publicly, maybe there's another dynamic going on.
Well, no, I was very pleased that Hoosiers were gathered here at the State House, letting their voices be heard. I will tell you that I'm very pleased with the progress that we're making working together to shorten the I-STEP test. And as I said, we all have our own opinions and our own ideas about education. I laid out my ideas for how we can improve education in Indiana last December. We included it in our budget. And I'm very pleased with the House budget that's been produced. It includes all of the key elements of our reforms, which are increasing funding for our traditional schools in form of tuition support, increasing the base foundation underneath our charter schools, the $1,500 capital grant, removing the cap on vouchers and the scholarship tax credit. So I'm very encouraged about the progress we're making. We welcome all voices to this debate, and I'm confident that in this education session, we're going to make great progress in our schools. One quick clarification, though, on tuition support. I've seen in some press accounts that I think I've heard that the House budget was some two times as much as we actually proposed. That's technically not correct. It's not only technically not correct, it's not correct. If you count our budget the way that the House counts their budget, and that is that you count the first year increase, and then in the second year you count the first year increase and the second year increase. Our overall number is about $333 million over 2 years in increased funding for our schools.
How much?
$333 million over two total. That's $130 million. We called in my budget submission for $130 million in year one, and then $67 million in year two. It was a 2-1 increase. Tony, did I get that clear? So 2-1. But the way the House reckons these things, and it's two different ways of adding. I got budget people back here that say, well, once you build in the base, then you add. The next year just is what the addition was. But so in year one, we called for $130 million increase in tuition support. In year two, we called for that $130 million plus $67 million. So that's $333 million over 2 years. In the House budget, they called for, instead of the $130 million that we called for, they called for $156 million in year one. Then they called for an additional $156 million on top of the first $156 million in year two. So that's what gets them to $470 million. Okay? So that's why I said we're in the ballpark. Even on the tuition support issue, we're calling for dramatic increases in spending for our traditional K-12 schools, and it's needful. Now, we're also committed to the reforms, the freedom to teach reforms that we're advancing. I'm so pleased. I said this to members of the Democrat caucus in the Senate today. I'm so pleased that our freedom to teach bill proceeded out of the committee by a 13-0 vote. That was... And we're going to give our traditional K-12 schools more opportunities to innovate and, in effect, emulate some of our public charter schools. And that, along with performance funding that made it possible for us to give significant bonuses to teachers last December, is a part and parcel of what we're doing. But those are some of the numbers.
Governor, question. Do you support a repeal of the common construction wage?
Absolutely.
And why?
Well, my record on this issue is very clear. Throughout my career, I have long believed that that wages on public projects should be set by the marketplace and not by government bureaucracy. I mean, that this measure would save taxpayers millions of dollars, and it would lessen the burden on cash-strapped local governments and local schools. I mean, there's not a day goes by in this office that I don't hear from somebody about the budget challenges that local governments and local schools are facing. And Hoosiers deserve to know that this common sense reform would significantly lessen the cost of construction for our local schools and our local governments. And if it makes it to my desk, I'll sign it.
Governor, doesn't that mean then if local governments are saving money by getting rid of the common construction wage, doesn't that then mean wages are going down?
Well, we're talking about skilled labor here. We're talking about good pay, even at the market. No, even at the market rate. I mean, I'd leave you to the experts, talk to the economists. I think about 30% of Indiana's counties already use market, kind of a market estimation under reforms that were passed, I think back in maybe in 1995 or thereabouts. But about a third of our counties are doing it this way, and they're good paying jobs. And I would just tell you this is a taxpayer issue. It's about making sure that the hard-earned dollars of Hoosier taxpayers are going as far as they can. And I think this also would lessen the burden on cash-strapped local schools and local governments. And as I said, if it gets to my desk, I'll sign it.
The tax simplification bill passed out of Ways and Means without one of its biggest pieces, which was the elimination of the double direct test. Are you comfortable with that bill not including that elimination?
Well, I mean, I still hope we can do something on double direct. I mean, this leads to a lot of disputes, and we can make it easier on taxpayers. But let me be very clear. I think we're making great progress on tax simplification. I really do. And this is not going to happen in one session. And I think the fact that House and Senate leadership is moving forward on our vision to close loopholes and there's broad agreement on eliminating more than a dozen various tax breaks, I think that represents meaningful progress, and I'm grateful.
Governor, on Sunday alcohol sales, would you sign as amended? Do you have concerns with the amendments?
I it's not on my agenda. If the bill reaches my desk, we'll give it a fair look. But I don't have a position on it, and I'm aware that issue is being debated in the legislative process.
It sounded like you thought the House budget spent too much. Are you concerned about what it leaves in the reserves?
Well, I just want to urge caution. I mean, you all know that the revenue was off forecast in the month of January, and I think that while the Indiana economy is growing, the American economy is growing, I think common sense says that we ought to be cautious about the commitments that we make. And ultimately, we all know we're going to wait until the April revenue forecast before we mint this thing. But for very early on, I've set certain expectations around the last budget that we passed and around this budget, and that is I don't think the state government's budget should grow faster than the average rate of inflation. And inflation, the average rate of inflation over the last 10 years, a little bit over 2%, okay? And I also think that reserves of 12.5% are important to maintaining our fiscal strength, maintaining our AAA bond rating. But as I said, we're in the ballpark here. We are in the ballpark on the House budget, and I think we've got a great opportunity to continue to work together in a way that's fiscally responsible, funds our priorities, and supports more growth in Indiana. Jim.
Senate Bill 1 takes effect on passage. The House version of that bill takes effect July 1st. When would you like to see it take effect?
Well, I'm very grateful for the progress on this measure. As you know, when I made the decision in December of this year to shut down the Center for Education and Career Innovation in my office, we did that after months of discord and dissension in the State Board of Education. And I really believe allowing the Republicans and Democrats who serve on the State Board of Education to select their chair will be an important step forward. I leave to the legislative process when that takes effect and the meets and bounds of that, but I'm hopeful that the Senate moves that legislation successfully today, grateful that the House has moved it. I honestly think it's a common sense reform that will encourage greater harmony, greater cooperation if you simply allow the Republicans and Democrats who serve on the State Board of Education to select their chair. Let me say one more thing about that. I read a lot about this, and I watch some TV about this, and I hear a lot of people talking about this. We're using some pretty hot rhetoric that this is about removing people and stripping power. And let me just say what this bill does and what this bill doesn't do. This bill does not remove the superintendent as the head of the Department of Education. The day this bill is signed, the superintendent will still be in the office to which she was elected, and she will still lead the Department of Education. Secondly, this bill does not remove the superintendent from the Board of Education. Thirdly, it does not dictate who the members of the Board of Education would select to be their chair. It simply gives them the ability, as most of the boards and commissions that I appoint have, to be able to make that decision, to choose an individual who they think would best be able to lead the board on the basis of consensus.
I think what you're hearing, Governor, is that in the vast majority of cases in the time that I've been here, and frankly the way Congress usually does things too, is that when they make a change in an elected official's duties or their pay or whatever, it takes effect after that person's term. That is generally the way most things take place. Mm-hmm. What makes this case different that somehow the rule, that sort of common understanding, shouldn't apply here?
Well, first and foremost, there's been a lot of dysfunction in the State Board of Education, folks, for the last 2 years. I think all the confusion that resulted in a doubling of the ISTEP test is a byproduct of the dysfunction in the State Board of Education. And I think it's important that we move forward the kind of reform in the State Board of Education that will allow the board to function on the basis of greater harmony, greater cooperation, and consensus. That's why I shut down my Office of Education and Career Innovation. And it was a better part of a year ago that the superintendent said that her problem was with that office. Well, I took that to heart. I'm very proud of the work that the CC office, as it came to be known, had done. But at the end of the day, it had become a source of friction, and so I thought it was important that we shut it down. This month, we shut it down. Now, in connection with that, I think allowing the Democrats and Republicans who serve on the State Board of Education to select their chair will also contribute to an environment where the State Board of Education can refocus on advancing the education policies that have been enacted by the General Assembly and signed into law and are in the interest of our kids and our families and our teachers and our schools.
Do you think you're...
Now, let me say one other thing about that, and I'll go to you. The State Board of Education is created by the Indiana General Assembly. I mean, the authority to establish education policy under our Constitution belongs to the Indiana General Assembly. And so I think it is fully within their purview, having established the State Board of Education, to organize it in the way they see fit. And I think this common sense reform will contribute to the State Board of Education being able to operate. But I want to say again, I had a guy walk up to me in the JC. I was buying a Valentine for my Valentine the other night. And he walked up, and a very wonderful man down in Columbus, and he walked up and said, Governor, had his second grade daughter with him. He said, I just had a quick question. He said, it didn't seem that we should be removing people from the office they were elected to. And I said, well, we're not removing anybody from the office they were elected to. And he said, well, but they're not going to be on the board anymore. And I said, well, sure, the superintendent's going to be on the Board of Education. Should always be on the Board of Education. And he said, well, what are you doing? I said, well, we're just letting the people on the Board of Education select their chair. And he said, oh. So, I get it that the rhetoric around here can get pretty hot, and that's all right. But I think at the end of the day, when we move this reform forward, Hoosiers are going to see that it is the kind of reform that will contribute to improving the way that Republicans and Democrats on the State Board of Education are able to do their job for our kids and for our families and for our schools. And that's why I support it. Please go ahead.
Several times as this bill's been debated, the Republican sponsors said there's plenty of blame to go around. Do you think your appointees to the Board of Education share any blame for this dysfunction you talk about? Have you talked with them about that?
Well, I haven't attended the State Board of Education meetings. And you will find out in this office, the standing rule here is civility and respect. And we have urged that among all our agencies, all of our dealings with constituents, and we certainly have urged that among members of the State Board of Education. But I'm not interested in assigning blame. I'm interested in allowing members of the State Board of Education to select the chair and to choose that individual, that man or woman, who would best be positioned to lead the State Board of Education on the basis of consensus. Because at the end, it's about the work. It's about the legislature passes the laws, funds education, provides for reforms. The Department of Education is tasked with implementing those policies. The State Board of Education serves as the accountability overseeing the implementation of that policy. It's an important role. It's an accountability role. It's important that group that represents people from both political parties, people in education, people from all across the state of Indiana, it's important that they be able to work effectively and efficiently. And I think this reform will contribute, along with my decision to shut down the Center for Education Career Innovation, will contribute to accomplishing that.
What about having four legislative appointments to the board? Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, I called for allowing the members of the State Board of Education to select their chair. And I am not enthusiastic about proposals that would change my ability to appoint members of the State Board of Education. Other questions? Go ahead.
Do you think any of these changes to the I-STEP would have happened if you hadn't come out last Monday and put your foot down?
That's not for me to say. Everybody's working together. There's going to be enough credit to go around. We're going to get this test shortened. I told you all a week ago. Somebody said to me, is there any chance this test isn't going to be shortened? And I said, no. And it's going to be shortened. Hoosier families can breathe a sigh of relief. We're all working together. There's enough credit to go around. I don't spend a lot of time looking in the rearview mirror around here.
Why do you feel that way, that you're not enthusiastic about changing the board appointment system?
Because I'm not.
But you just said a minute ago
that
the General Assembly is the public policy maker for education, so why shouldn't they get an appointment?
I didn't say they couldn't do it. I said I wasn't enthusiastic about it.
Indiana led the nation again for a second year in a row in meth lab bus, and the first bill to ever get this far in terms of a prescription requirement for cold meds is advanced out of the Senate committee. If that were to make it to your desk, would you support it?
I'm very proud of the work the Indiana State Police have been doing, and it is both to the credit of our law enforcement community, but also it's evidence of how serious this challenge is in communities large and small across Indiana that we led the nation in meth lab bus. I mean, we're doing the work, we're going after it. This is a this drug is a heinous poison that's highly addictive and far too available in our communities. And I'm not familiar specifically with the progress of that legislation. If it gets to my desk, we'll give it a fair look. But this is an issue that we are leaning into in this administration, and we're going to continue to evaluate all policy options to confront it. Anybody? Scott?
Are you okay with the school funding formula that gives double-digit increases to wealthy districts, the wealthiest in the state, like Carmel and Zionsville, and multimillion-dollar cuts to the poorest districts like Gary and Indianapolis?
Well, I support raising the foundation. You know, we in the last budget that I signed, we called for a significant increase in K-12 funding and tuition support. But after all the dust settled, we found out there were a lot of communities that were impacted very little by those dollars. And so I think that you know this, Scott, because you're an expert in this area, but you know, you've got the foundation that affects all the schools, and then you've got the complexity index and other factors that are on top of that. And I do support efforts to raise the foundation, and it squares with my thought about fairness in funding in Indiana. Anybody else?
Well, listen, I'm not sure that addressed the question though. So what about...
Sure it did. yeah. So, there was a yes in there. I mean, there look,
changes
I, yeah.
to the formula and the complexity formula that play...
Look, the school funding forward, to say that it is complex is a gross understatement. What we've tried to do was frame some overall spending money and also call for fairness in funding and call for ways that we could build the foundation underneath all of our schools, so that all of our schools would benefit from what is poised to be a historic increase in K-12 spending in the state of Indiana. I mean, one of the benefits of having a balanced budget, strong reserves, and a growing economy is that we can invest in education in Indiana in new and in significant ways. And I just want to make sure that when we do that, that it benefits schools all across the state of Indiana. And but we're a long way from the final details being inked. I don't want to point to the House budget and say I like the way they did it, but I'm just saying to you I agree with the principle that raising the foundation is a good starting point for making sure that that increases in tuition support reach all of our schools and communities, large and small. Other items? How about two more quick ones? We got time. Anybody else?
I think they have a
good. You made a decision about president yet?
Have I made a decision about my future?
Yeah.
No. Okay. No. We're headed out east to Washington D.C. and as I mentioned, going to be at the RGA, the NGA. I didn't mention I'm doing a couple of speeches you may have heard about on the internet. I'm speaking at CPAC this year, and it'll be carried. Speaking of what's called the Reagan Dinner, I've actually spoken at that before. I think it's on Friday night in a couple weeks. And I'll be talking a little bit about the future of my party. And it'll be live on C-SPAN, which means it'll be literally watched by tens of Americans.
So, how about Club for Growth? How can we go over there and get you?
It's the next day. It's convenient. They invited me down. So I'm going to...
It's for presidential candidates, right?
They just invited me to come down and speak at lunch. So I'm looking very much forward to it. But look, this is an opportunity for me to, whatever the future holds for me and for my family, I have every intention of talking about the progress we've made here in Indiana and the policies and the approach that I think our party should embrace in the years ahead, whoever's leading the party. We good?
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. I know it's a busy day.
Okay.